You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, delighted to have on the show Simon Court. He's a name that should be familiar to listeners. He's an ACT Member of Parliament, and in many other claims to fame, he's actually what they call a Parliamentary Undersecretary. And in his case, for the RMA, the Resource Management Act reform, and for infrastructure. So two very substantial areas of work and a very important role as well. So Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Simon. And hello to Reality Check Radio listeners. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, well, look, thanks for coming on. Our listeners are always very keen to understand what's happening in Parliament and certainly from your side, what's happening in government, because obviously you're leading a lot of work in the infrastructure space, the energy space, the RMA, comments around mining. But I thought I might start with something a little lighter, because you did what I thought was a hilarious video retort to Chloe Sawbuck recently, who was virtue signaling about mining, and you did an amazing response. I wonder if you wanted to share that as best one can on radio with listeners.
Well, I couldn't believe it when I saw Chloe pop up on my Instagram feed complaining about the fact that we need to open up more mining in New Zealand. You know, she was doing a piece to camera. She'd flown a camera crew down there. They were standing on the side of a hill somewhere, and she was recording this either through her beautiful new iPhone or some piece of high-tech camera gear. And I just felt that I had to point out on behalf of all New Zealanders who do get why mining and minerals are important, that we need coal because it powers power stations and dries milk and keeps homes warm. We need oil and gas because that creates the jet fuel that enables people like Chloe and everyone else to fly around the world, fly around the country, doing business, getting on with their lives. And of course, we need minerals because those critical minerals are in everything that we use and consume. You know, they're in satellites, they're in our handheld devices, they're in our TVs, but they're also in medicines and all kinds of products that we have come to depend on for our quality of life. And I think with the left, with the Greens, there's no sense of perspective that we can actually have mining in New Zealand, we can do environmental management and the restoration that comes after it really well. In my video, I point to an example of where that's done really well in the South Island of New Zealand. There's also no understanding of trade-offs, that actually, if we're going to say no to mining in New Zealand, we'll simply be buying those products somewhere else and we'll lose billions and billions of dollars of economic value, you know, thousands and thousands of highly paid, highly skilled jobs. And these aren't people who've gone to universities, all of them. A lot of them have become highly skilled and highly paid because they've learned trades and they've learned their skills. And weaponizing the environment and climate for political purposes. I mean, it's pathetic in this day and age. All of these problems around environment and climate are simply technical problems that Kiwis, engineers, scientists already know how to solve. So I just wanted to make it clear to Chloe that, yes, we're not going to take your stream of consciousness nonsense at face value. We are going to respond to it. We're going to respond to it with facts.
And I just thought it was brilliant. And can I encourage listeners to look up Simon's various social media pages and check it out? I thought you really nailed it too at the end when you pointed out that actually mining companies do amazing restoration because of engineers like yourself and scientists and others. So I thought it was just gold. And that's actually quite a good segue in, because you know, you are vocally pushing back against particularly the left and the opposition, who are, look, they're anti-growth, anti-mining, they're anti-energy, it seems, you know, again, Chloe's comments. I mean, why do you think they're so entrenched against the likes of mining? You guys can't even in government seem to discuss it without getting, not literally, but figuratively, shot at by them.
Well, what I've come to understand through coming into politics a bit later in life after having a career as an engineer and project manager is that there are a group of people whose values around caring for others and caring for the environment, for example, kind of cloud their judgment when it comes to, well, how will we pay for the care that we want to give to the environment, or the care we want to give people in hospitals, or even the care that we want to give people in prisons who, you know, for a whole bunch of reasons have ended up being locked up and at some point are going to come out. So, you know, how do we push back? We reflect back that we care as well, but we have different ways of dealing with the problem that don't involve simply shutting down entire industries, telling people they're not allowed to use fossil fuels, opening the prisons and letting people out. We have evidence-based proposals, and we also have a limited budget. So we have to make trade-offs around where we spend money, because you could throw an unlimited amount of money at trying to stop global warming, but little old New Zealand's not going to even show up. We're not going to move the dial at all. What we could do is invest in, say, climate adaptation, making sure a lot of our towns and cities and coastlines where we've got important infrastructure like roads and wastewater plants are actually protected against sea level rise, or potentially we have to strengthen them or even move some assets. Now, that's a practical response to climate change. And I think it's having finally starting to sink in with people who've been very concerned about, say, climate change and the environment, that we're going to have to deal with these issues in a technical way rather than shutting things down and protesting and banning things.
How do you actually find that trading off side? So you're in government now, as I say, you've got pretty substantial roles and responsibilities. Might be good for listeners just to quickly understand how that trade-off works, because as you say, there's so many things that people want done. Doesn't matter if it's in the environment, in the mining space, energy, infrastructure. We all want more roads, more trains, everything. But of course, there's a limit. So is there a lot of negotiation, discussions, consensus building within your role?
There certainly is. And my role is undersecretary. I'm not a minister. So my role is entirely policy development and influencing better choices, in cabinet committees and around the cabinet table, making sure that ministers are aware of these trade-offs that need to be made and what are the costs and benefits. So, for example, you think about toll roads, and we know there's a communities in the Manawatu on either side of the Tararua-Manawatu highway project, which are concerned about having to pay a toll, which is around $4.40 for a private motor vehicle and $8 something for a truck. Like, that's a new road. It's going to cost upwards of $500 million to deliver. The maintenance costs on that you could expect to be in the region of $20s, $30s millions per annum. And telling people that they're going to have to pay a small toll, less than a cup of coffee, to use that road, that's going to cut 15 to 20 minutes off their journey time, where there's highly unlikely that you'll ever experience a serious injury or fatality if you're using that road. And there are some trade-offs. Like, we can't keep building out our infrastructure unless we can find more ways to raise revenue to pay for the maintenance and operation of the infrastructure we've got. We've seen how that's gone in the past 20 years. Our roads have fallen to bits because successive governments have failed to pay for the infrastructure. You put a tolling system in place, it's very clear the money gets collected, goes back to the road you're driving on. We actually think that's fair, but there is a trade-off, because there will be people who say, I can't afford to drive on, I've got to go the long way, my car's old and it's not fuel efficient, I've got to go and see my nana as she's on her own. You know what? We have a transfer payment system in New Zealand that's called the social welfare system. And so if there are people who need help paying bills, paying for petrol vouchers, much better dealing with those small individual cases than dumbing down our entire transport and revenue generating and road maintenance system to accommodate just a few people who we accept are in hardship. So those are the kind of trade-offs that we need to make. We're in government, and my role as a civil engineer, I studied engineering economics and project management when I was at university, being able to put some of these concepts into practice and encourage better decision-making is something I'm really proud of.
Well, that's one of the reasons I quite enjoyed your speeches when I was in Parliament, because you'd have a number of politicians across the House, but would opine with great virtuous ideas, but you would sort of bring it down to reality. And speaking of reality, there's obviously lots of plans that you guys are working on in government, particularly around the RMA and infrastructure. And I think it was last week you've put out the RMA fast track list. Did you want to give us some highlights of some of these proposals and projects?
So in terms of resource management reform, the government's got a very busy program. Firstly, we nixed David Parker and Labor's crazy co-governance, the environment is everything approach to resource management, which the previous Excellent. Government passed. So we got rid of that. We're panel beating a couple of parts of the old RMA to take out some of the most egregious punishments on farmers and people trying to build things. We've got a couple of bills going through Parliament right now. And then the fast track approvals bill is actually, it's a piece of catch-up legislation, because we haven't been able to consent major projects efficiently in the past 5 to 10 years. and what the fast track bill does, essentially say, look, here's 140 plus projects. They're going to proceed, but on the basis that they get the environmental conditions right, they get their permits through DOC, and they get their permits for, say, Crown Minerals in a one-stop shop and within 6 months. So it's basically putting a rocket into the resource management system. Some of those projects are, there's over 55,000 homes enabled to be built through these projects. In Auckland, where I live, the old Carrington Polytechnic, what people might remember as the Oakley Mental Asylum, a piece of land there in Mount Albert, there's going to be 4,500 homes built there in a joint venture with iwi groups and the Crown. You know, there's projects like that all over the country. There's major roads, major highways, the route for the Brynderwyns, you know, for the future replacement of that really difficult piece of state highway. Yeah, that's in there. So we've got renewable energy. The purpose is just to unlock the resource management system so we can get on with building things. It's certainly not to not to bulldoze through the environment in any way. And you know, a lot of the people who've protested about it, it turns out that particularly some of those, you know, very vocal iwi Māori groups, it turns out that the other part of their organisation has actually applied for successfully to become a fast track consent. So, look, I think on balance, you know, the ultimate goal is replacing Resource Management Act. It's a dog. You know, Kiwis need to get, I think at peak, we're getting between 40 and 50,000 consents required of them every year for everything, you know, from a slightly higher than 1 meter high retaining wall to a major piece of infrastructure. But 40 to 50,000 consents a year is outrageous. You know, we'd like to think we can get that down to half of that or less with replacing the entire system. And we'll be introducing a bill to replace the RMA next year. Decisions will be taken about that later this year or early next.
Well, thanks for what you're leading there. I mean, look, it's been a bugbear of successive governments and very few have really got onto it. So it's, you know, good that you guys are. I mean, amongst other things, how many people are always talking about why do things take so long in New Zealand? And so that is brilliant. Hey, look, to change tangents quickly in the last couple of minutes, completely away from the RMA and infrastructure, but I know amongst many things, you're also a very strong supporter of Israel and its right to defend itself. And in recent days, we've had the likes of Damien O'Connor's tweet, I think Duncan, I've had a name blank, but the MP in Christchurch.
Dr. Duncan Webb.
Webb. God, apologies to Duncan, I'm mind blank, but he was standing next to these PFLP terrorist flags and stuff. So just quickly tell us, you know, why are you so strong on this space and your thoughts on their actions?
Well, when I was younger, I grew up in Auckland. I had friends in the Jewish community. I went to Bar Mitzvah. And I never thought of my Jewish friends as being any different to myself, apart from the fact they had this really interesting community they belonged to, they're very passionate about. And I never really noticed anti-Semitism in New Zealand. It wasn't until I got older and I went to university in the 1990s and I started to hear some things that were really off what people were saying around Israel and the Jewish state. And so I've always had the sense of perspective that we must stand up for people in our own community who are from a Jewish background or Israelis living here and make sure that they feel safe here. So that's primarily been my focus in speaking out. The ACT Party is very keen on upholding people's individual dignity, human rights, freedom of expression. And so, you know, that aligns very closely with my values. But Israel is under attack. And initially it was from Hamas and then Hezbollah, you know, another terrorist organization operating out of Lebanon. They fired tens of thousands of rockets into Israel. You know, hundreds of people have been killed and injured, you know, by these rockets. And that's, you know, after the awful attack by Hamas on October 7. Now Iran are wailing in with hundreds of ballistic missiles, you know, 11, 12-minute flight time from the territory of Iran into Israel. Israel's a small democracy like New Zealand, 10 million people. They're the only democracy in the Middle East. So, you know, I think it's really important that New Zealand stands with countries where we share similar values, whose very existence is under threat and whose way of life and their ethnicity is the reason they're under threat. They're being threatened not because they happen to live somewhere or they were born into a country and someone thinks they shouldn't be there. They're being threatened because they're Jewish and because of their ethnicity. And that is unacceptable.
And so with dynamics like Damien and Duncan, your thoughts on what they've been saying and doing, and if I might challenge it too, how do we balance that with free speech, if you will? I mean, even things that are terrible, but yeah, how do you sort of, what do you think and how do you balance that?
Well, Damien O'Connor is the Labour Associate Foreign Affairs spokesperson, and he retweeted a comment on social media that what the Palestinians did on October 7 was acceptable. And he was referring to the Hamas-led attack on Israel. Now, what was Damien O'Connor thinking? Firstly, does he agree with that? Because he reposted. I'd assume he does, based on other comments he's made in the House. He seems to not have regard for the human rights, dignity, and right to live in peace of the Israeli people and Jewish people. Very thoughtless. He then deleted it, but he hasn't apologised. He put out some wiffly-waffly statement, as does Chris Hipkins. So, you know, there's a problem with the Labour Party in that they appear to be infected with anti-Semitism. They appear not to understand that a little democracy like Israel is like New Zealand and needs our support. And that the Jewish community in New Zealand, you know, I was at a community event to a memorial for October 7 attacks on Monday night. You know, they are afraid. They have been attacked. Their businesses have been doxxed. You know, they've had people come to their homes and businesses and spray paint them. They feel unsafe in this country. And so for politicians like Damien O'Connor and Duncan Webb and the leader of Labour, Hipkins, you know, to be apologists for these kind of comments and these kind of behaviours is really awful. And you know, I just feel my job as a member of parliament is to speak up, make sure the Jewish community feels supported and that they know they've got friends in parliament and friends in government.
Well, Simon, thank you so much then for all you're doing and coming on to the show today and talking us through everything from obviously your views on the Israel conflict at the moment, right through to everything around energy, infrastructure, the RMA. Those topics, all and each of them are huge. So we'll have to have you back on. But thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Simon. And thank you to Reality Check Radio listeners.
And that was Simon Court. He's an ACT Member of Parliament and he's the Parliamentary Undersecretary for the RMA Reform and Infrastructure.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.